Coming up is the Space Show. Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I am Andrew Rennie. On this evening's The Space Show, the Apollo mode decision. How they decided how the Apollo missions would get to the moon. Also, keep your diary handy. We have an entry for it. Last week was the 60th anniversary of a decision that changed the course of the Apollo Man on the Moon project. Indeed, one might argue it also altered world history.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and
At the time Bart Howard wrote that song in 1954, visionaries like Wernher von Braun were already planning how to actually achieve that goal. Their plan eventually became Project Apollo. When Kay Ballard recorded that song as In Other Words, in 1954, neither she nor Bart Howard could have known that this song, albeit by another crooner, would travel to the moon at least twice within 15 years. That story in about 40 minutes' time. This evening, the Space Show presents How to Land on the Moon? A review of the Apollo mode decision. Researched, written, and presented by Andrew Rennie. The history of Project Apollo can be divided into two parts. Before 1962, June the 7th, and after 1962, June the 7th. I will explain why later. My story this evening is related to the struggle between three concepts of how to get to the moon. But first, some precursor ideas. Humans had long thought of travel to the moon, but it only became a realistic proposition after the Second World War. But it was never going to happen without public understanding and support. To that end, Wernher von Braun and others began a long campaign to drum up that support. Part of that campaign were a series of articles in magazines, such as Collier's, in 1952. Now remember that this was 5.5 years before Sputnik. The plan was to assemble the lunar fleet in Earth orbit using giant winged shuttles to lift the components into space. Some plans called for a huge space station from which the lunar missions could be launched and to which they could return. This would mean the winged shuttles would not need to fly to the moon. The rockets leaving Earth would be huge. With the space station built, assembly of the lunar fleet could begin. This would be a cargo ship and a passenger ship. Because these craft will not land on Earth, there would be no need to carry heat shields to the moon. There would be 20 men and no women on the lunar spaceship. Outdoing Elon Musk, three lunar landers would make simultaneous descents to the moon. Once down on the moon, the astronauts get busy with Caterpillar track rovers. The first stay on the moon would be 6 weeks. On liftoff from the moon, the landing legs were to be jettisoned soon after takeoff to save weight. Von Braun's grandiose visions even extended to fleets of spaceships to Mars. Since we all know the end result of the Apollo mission mode controversy, a bit of timeline history won't give any spoilers. On 1957, October the 4th, in the Soviet Union, Korolev launches Sputnik 1, the first artificial satellite. 1 year later, on 1958, October the 1st, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration is formed in the United States. A week later, Project Mercury is officially established. Within days, Keith Glennon established a space task group at Langley under Robert Gilruth to work on Project Mercury. Now, Mercury was a one-man spacecraft. Meanwhile, Rosen and Swenk began to sketch out a possible lunar mission. Already in 1959, the idea of a landing stage and an ascent stage was clearly set out. The lunar ascent rocket would be detached from the command module before atmospheric entry. At the same time, the United States Army was exploring lunar landing concepts. On 1959, October the 21st, NASA formally acquired the Army's Saturn project. And this Saturn project was a project to build a large rocket. This action followed much argument. The Army reluctantly acquiesced for two main reasons. Firstly, to prevent the Air Force taking over the Von Braun team. And secondly, because the Saturn booster had its primary place in space exploration and not in the Army missile program. During 1960, NASA was preparing to implement its long-range plan beyond Mercury. This included a manned circumlunar mission that was, as yet, unnamed. Then, in July, a NASA headquarters group recommended that NASA plan a lunar landing to be made sometime after 1970. On July 28 of 1960, NASA's Director of Spaceflight Programs, Abe Silverstein, announced that the NASA manned circumlunar mission project would be named Apollo. The mission was based on a proposal by General Electric. As related in the official NASA history book by Helen Wells, Susan Whiteley and Carrie Kerr-Jeans, the name Apollo had an appeal for a number of reasons. Apollo was the Greek god of poetry, music, prophecy, and archery. The naming was following the precedent of using mythology set by the Mercury Project. On 1960, September the 8th, President Eisenhower visited the Redstone Arsenal, escorted by von Braun. Late that year, President Eisenhower's Science Advisory Committee reports that a manned lunar landing was feasible, but it would cost between $26 and $38 billion. Yes, billion. But Eisenhower refused to approve any manned program beyond Mercury. In 1960, NASA held a design competition for a lunar craft. The Martin Company submission was for a direct ascent mission with a lifting body crew compartment to allow for a comfortable re-entry back into the Earth's atmosphere. By 1961, Rector of General Dynamics was showing a modified version of its Apollo circumlunar spacecraft. Now, it's interesting to note that Apollo 13 did eventually fulfill the original plan for Apollo to make a circumlunar mission. That is, a mission out to the moon and back again without going into orbit around the moon. In 1961, George Lowe's committee said, and I quote, "The manned lunar landing mission could be accomplished during the decade at a cost of $7 billion through fiscal year 1969. Early in the Kennedy administration, Lyndon Johnson took control of the Space Council and persuaded James Webb to head NASA and talks Kennedy into emphasizing space. Now, on 1961, May the 25th, Kennedy gave a speech to Congress that was to change history.
"Now it is time to take longer strides. Time for a great new American enterprise. Time for this nation to take a clearly leading role in space achievement, which in many ways may hold the key to our future on Earth. I believe we possess all the resources and talents necessary. I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth. No single space project in this period will be more impressive to mankind or more important for the long-range exploration of space, and none will be so difficult or expensive to accomplish. We propose to accelerate the development of the appropriate lunar spacecraft. We propose to develop alternate liquid and solid fuel boosters, much larger than any now being developed, until certain which is superior."
The Apollo project changed from a circumlunar one to a landing one. The problem was, no one at NASA or elsewhere had any idea how to do it, much less before the decade is out, which everyone assumed was the end of 1969, not 1970. Your view on that depends on how you count decades. The first decade in the current era only had 9 years, not 10. Well, late in 1961, contracts for major Apollo program elements were signed before the lunar landing mode had been decided. Even so, three main mission types were planned. Now, one thing was obvious. There would now be several variants of the Apollo spaceship. At the end of 1961, plans to develop the intermediate-sized Saturn C3 and Saturn C4 rockets were cancelled, constraining the possible mission modes to getting to the moon. This cancellation also reduced the chances of constructing von Braun's cherished space station. From 1961 through to mid-1962, there were vigorous discussions and arguments about the mission mode for Apollo. On 1961, December the 7th, NASA Associate Administrator Robert Siemens announced the Gemini project, a two-man craft. Its aim was to develop the technique of rendezvous in space. The original concept had been called Mercury Mark II. Well, on 1962, June the 7th, 60 years ago last week, von Braun formally accepted lunar orbit rendezvous by concluding a long meeting with the proponents of the various mission modes by saying, "Well, gentlemen, I have listened to the arguments. I'm proud of the work you have done. Now I'll tell you the position of the center," by which he meant the Marshall Space Flight Center. The decision on mission mode was made on grounds that were as much political as technical, and I'll return to that assertion. So on 1962, July 11, the decision to use the Lunar Orbit Rendezvous mission mode for Apollo was announced. On 1962 September the 11th, President Kennedy toured the Redstone Arsenal guided by von Braun. And in his remarks there, he referenced the fact that von Braun and many of his team came from Germany.
The President's remarks upon arrival at the General George Marshall Space Center from the Huntsville Municipal Airport, Huntsville, Alabama, September 11th, 1962.
General, gentlemen, I want to express our great satisfaction in your presence here in the United States. This kind of joint community effort, the community of the free nations, would have been regarded as impossible two decades ago. But now we take it very much for granted. We are glad you're here. The effort that we and you are making in common is to defend our countries, defend our peace, defend the vital interests of the free world in the strong belief that in time the disease of liberty, as Thomas Jefferson called it, will be catching in all parts of the world. You're here on a most important mission, and that is one which is greatly identified with the traditional and the present and future aspirations of free men and women. We are glad you're here, and we are confident that you will teach us as much as you will learn. Gentlemen, we're proud to have you in the United States.
Now, von Braun even got to ride in the presidential limousine during the royal tour. And Vice President Johnson was there as well. Well, reporters, expecting that this was to be a simple photo opportunity, were astonished to hear a vigorous discussion on the Apollo mission mode. Von Braun was briefing the president on the Lunar Rendezvous mission when presidential advisor Jerome Wiesner interrupted von Braun, saying, No, that's no good. Webb immediately defended von Braun and the Lunar Orbit Rendezvous. The adversaries engaged in a heated exchange until the president stopped them, stating that the matter was still subject to final review. Not close enough to hear exactly what was said, newsmen nevertheless heard enough to report there were still serious disputes about how to get to the moon. On 1962, October the 24th, James Webb visited the White House and told Kennedy that this was his firm intention that the Lunar Excursion Module contract was going to be let to Grumman Aviation. Either that, or Kennedy might later consider accepting his resignation as administrator. Well, the following months, the Grumman Company is awarded the contract for designing and producing the Lunar Excursion Module. So this changes the mission mode decision from tentative to confirmed. On 1963, November the 16th, President Kennedy again visited Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, this time with von Braun, and inspected the Saturn I rocket that was being prepared to launch the Apollo Saturn V mission, which was, in fact, launched into orbit on 1964, January the 29th. In 1966 June, the name Lunar Excursion Module was changed to Lunar Module. Now, some writers have incorrectly said that this was because the word excursion sounded frivolous, as in, say, an excursion to the beach. Actually, it was because the word implied mobility on the moon, and this Lunar Module did not have that capability. Well, from 1962 to 1969, the design of Grumman's Lunar Module evolved over time. The story of those changes is, of course, a tale to be told on another day. Well, then, on 1969, July the 21st, Australian Eastern Standard Time, history was made.
Lights on. Down 2.5. Forward. Forward. That's 30 feet down, 2.5. Picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2.5 down. Fake shadow. 4 forward. 4 forward. Drifting to the right a little. 9.5.
30 seconds.
Forward. Okay. Contact light. Okay. Engine stop. Drifting Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
A little over 6 hours later, Neil Armstrong took that historic first step onto the lunar surface.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Well, we will continue our story of the Apollo mission mode and explain exactly what those modes were in our next segment.
On FM, online, and on TuneIn, 24/7. This is 88.3 Southern FM.
But the world all stopped to watch on a July afternoon. Watch the man named Armstrong walking on the moon. Watch the man named Armstrong walk along the moon.
On this evening's The Space Show, we are discussing the mission mode, the decision to on how to get to the moon. Now, we haven't really explained what those modes are yet. So, do you remember that at the start of the program, I said last week was an historic anniversary? So why was 1962 July the tipping point? Well, it had long been recognised that von Braun's grandiose plans, as set out in Collier's magazine, were not possible. An alternative way to land on the moon was proposed by the Convair Company. Reminding us of the way that the Curiosity rover landed on Mars, the Convair craft would be lowered on strings. Others were proposing a mini von Braun-type vehicle that could transport lots of cargo to the moon, then blast off directly back to Earth. In 1961, employees at Langley, which is where the Mercury project was run from, proposed sending a modified Mercury craft to the moon. Not only that, they also planned to get the astronaut to pilot a single-seat contraption down to the lunar surface. In 1961 November, Harry Shoaff of the Space Task Group Engineering Division proposed a strange lunar lander, which was to be used with an advanced version of the Mercury spacecraft. Now, one of the Langley group was a guy called John Hubolt. Hubolt's original proposals were unrealistic. He calculated a mass of 6,800 kilograms for a pressurized lunar module and 1,140 kilograms for an open platform. And the joke went around that the astronaut should wrap an aviator silk scarf around his neck as he descended to the moon. Now, there are five main ways to land on the moon and return to the Earth. Only two of these were under serious consideration in 1961. The first one is called direct ascent. Now, in this mode, you blast off from the Earth directly to the moon, land, explore, then blast off with enough energy to come directly back to Earth. Now, the rocket men in Huntsville liked this. Bigger rockets for them to build. And the direct ascent would require the huge Nova rocket. Now, this would have had a mass of 5,900 tons and a liftoff thrust of 180 meganewtons, although I have seen other estimates of the mass and thrust. For comparison, the Atlas was the largest rocket then available, with a thrust of 1.6 meganewtons, And the later Saturn V used 33.5 meganewtons to lift 2,767 tons. Well, the direct ascent method was seen as having the advantage of simplicity. But it did have a number of disadvantages. One of the big ones was the need to ramp up thrust by two orders of magnitude. In other words, to go from that 1.6 meganewtons up to 180 meganewtons. A second disadvantage was the huge cost of doing so. Another disadvantage was that there would be no chance to check out the spacecraft after launch because you are already on the way. There's no chance to check it out. And direct ascent could have been achieved if the Saturn V was hydrogen-fueled in all stages and the crew was only two people. But hydrogen was, in 1961, an unproven technology. A fourth disadvantage of direct ascent is this. A heavy landing return vehicle might break through the lunar crust or sink deeply into the lunar crust. Remember that the exact nature of the lunar surface was unknown until Luna 9 and Surveyor 1 landed in 1966. A tall stack might land on an uneven surface and topple over. Disadvantage number 6. The crew, lying on their backs some 60 metres above the tail, would have a lack of visibility when landing. Disadvantage number 7. Nova would take 10 years longer to develop than the Saturn V. Well, there was another mode that had its advocates, and it was called Earth Orbit Assembly. That is to build the entire mooncraft in Earth orbit by sending it up in pieces on smaller rockets. Then you fly directly to the moon as in the direct ascent plan. Again, the disadvantages were numerous. The precise timing of multiple launches would need to be made to achieve rendezvous. Remember, neither manned nor unmanned rendezvous had been achieved in 1961. Now, this method had all the disadvantages of the direct method in that the lunar landing vehicle would still be as ponderous. The Earth orbit rendezvous method could conceivably use lots of Saturn I's or the Saturn C5 then being planned. John Hubolt calculated that 10 Saturn I launches would be required. Now, Earth orbit rendezvous did have two main advantages. First, there was no need to build that giant Nova rocket. Secondly, a space station in Earth orbit would be one spin-off of this method. This was the favourite of von Braun, a long-time advocate of space stations. The problem was still how to bring the payload mass down so that it could be flown on the Saturn C5, so the cost was still very high. Now, several variants of Earth orbit rendezvous method were proposed. The favourite was to launch one or more unmanned tanker rockets in Earth orbit, then launch a manned Apollo to rendezvous and replenish its fuel before setting course for the moon. Again, there were disadvantages. Cryogenic propellants, that is propellants that are like liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen, are tricky to store and pump here on Earth. But in weightless vacuum, well, no one knew if it could be done. And disadvantage number 2. This mission mode would need two Saturn V launches for each mission. Another mission mode was called Lunar Surface Rendezvous. Land a cache of fuel and supplies on the moon with an unmanned rocket to await arrival of a manned spaceship. Advantage: well, the Nova would not be required, as the mission could be accomplished with two Saturn V's. Disadvantage: a whole series of them here. Lunar Surface Rendezvous had four main disadvantages. If the payload of the unmanned rocket were damaged, there would be no return ticket for the astronaut. This damage might not be apparent until the crew arrived on the moon. The astronauts would spend much of their time on the moon doing the refueling, with very little time left for geology or other science. If liquid oxygen were used, it would have a limited lifetime before it had all boiled away, so you wouldn't want your crew to be delayed getting there. If the astronauts landed too far off target, they would be unable to reach their supply base and refuel. Now remember, Apollo 11 overshot its target by 7 kilometres, so that's a pretty long walk. Later, writer Piers Brizzoni summed up the situation thus, and I quote, "As 1961 drew to a close, the problems of the direct ascent approach had become painfully obvious. The upper stage of the lunar rocket, about the mass and length of a Navy destroyer, would have to land on the moon stern first without toppling over, then take off again without the benefit of a launch gantry or ground crew. It was also a challenge to work out how the astronauts, sitting on top of this monster, were supposed to pilot it safely to a touchdown when they couldn't see the moon through their windows. They'd have to ease the ship down using rear-pointing TV cameras or some such." And Brizzoni continues, "When over-optimistic sketches emerged showing the rocket landing on its side on skids, that signaled the end of the ball game for direct ascent." End of quotes. Oh, another quote here from Brizzoni. He asserts that Von Braun and his team at Marshall preferred Earth orbit rendezvous, not just because it seemed safer, but because it also guaranteed them a greater technical role in the lunar voyage itself, rather than just blasting hardware away from Earth.
Come and take a trip in my rocket ship. We'll have a lovely afternoon. Kiss the world goodbye and away we fly. Destination moon. Travel fast as light till we're lost from sight. The Earth is like a toy balloon.
In 1916, a Russian mechanic named Yuri Kondratyuk was considering how to travel to the moon. He wrote, and I quote, "The entire spacecraft need not land," end of quote. He expanded this in a self-published book in 1929. Now, unaware of Kondratyuk's work, Dr. John Hubolt was pondering the problem. He was a relatively obscure engineer working under Gilruth at Langley Field. His regular work was in aerodynamics research. Already his one-man concept had been laughed at a court, so many regarded him as a joke. Undeterred, he began to study orbital rendezvous techniques. Then the idea struck him, and I quote, "Did Columbus have to drive his vessel up onto the beach in order to set a man ashore in a new world when a longboat was ample for the purpose?" End of quote. He scribbled rough but workably accurate estimates of mass factors on an envelope. He later refined the calculations and typed them up for a report. He had discovered the mass at launch could be cut approximately in half. Ergo, a single Saturn V would suffice for each mission. Humboldt began a long campaign to proselytize his ideas. He was able to calculate the probabilities of mission success for each of the mission modes. Well, the naysayers included von Braun, Max Faget, and Kennedy's powerful advisor, Jerome Wiesner. Humboldt wrote to NASA Associate Administrator Robert Siemens on 1961, May the 19th, outlining his concerns. Most of that letter had to do with launch vehicles, but it also mentioned lunar orbit rendezvous. Humboldt received a brief note of acknowledgement from Siemens, but no action ensued. Well, just days after Kennedy's speech to Congress, Humboldt drew a sketch, which is now known as the To the Moon or Bust drawing. In it, Humboldt showed that it would take 10 Saturn I launches to loft into Earth orbit the components for a manned lunar landing. In this concept, 2 one-man lunar landers would be flown on the same mission. In another drawing, Humboldt considers 2 one-man landers launched by the later cancelled Saturn C3 rocket. In the following months, Humboldt prepared a detailed report setting out the rationale for lunar orbit rendezvous, supported by detailed calculations. And this was delivered to NASA on 1961, October the 31st. He continued his crusade to gather converts. On 1961, November the 15th, Humboldt again breached protocol by writing directly to Webb's associate administrator, Robert Siemens. Humboldt felt he had to defend himself from accusations that he was a crank. Now, it is not clear whether Humboldt included a full copy of his October 31 report with his letter, but it is clear that parts of it at least were attached. In his 1971 book, Earthbound Astronauts, Bjorn Ley wrote, "Siemens was sufficiently impressed and disturbed by Humboldt's outburst to bucket on to his director of manned spaceflight, Brainerd Holmes, not perfunctorily, but with a request for serious evaluation." Well, Holmes promptly dispatched his newly appointed deputy, Joseph Shea, to Langley. Well, by the time that Shea left in early 1962, Humboldt was in the end zone for a touchdown. Cheered on by supporters who now numbered nearly everyone in NASA except von Braun. And we'll continue our story in a few moments. This is The Space Show.
88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
On this evening's The Space Show, we are looking at the mode decision, the decision on how to get to the moon, which was made 60 years ago last week. Well, as Bernard Ley tells it, that writer, back in Washington, Joe Shea's favourable report on lunar orbit rendezvous was followed by several months of computer analysis on a national scale. By the end of 1962 June, mountains of data from the computers had carried the day for the bug approach. Gilruth presented his conclusions on 1962 July the 5th in Huntsville to von Braun. There had been a long-standing antagonism between von Braun's rocket-oriented camp at Huntsville and Gilruth's pilot and aviation-oriented camp at Houston. During 1962, Joseph Shea had tried to get the Manned Spacecraft Center and the Marshall Space Flight Center to work together. According to von Braun's biographer, Michael Neufeld, Max Faget of the Manned Spacecraft Center told Shay to get lost. Well, Neufeld says, and I quote, Faget was never able to satisfactorily solve the problem of how to land the big Earth orbit rendezvous vehicle on the moon. Originally, the lander was 27 meters long. And Faget proposed a lunar crasher stage. This would be a module under the command module that would contain enough propellant to slow the spacecraft into lunar orbit, then lower it from lunar orbit down to near the surface before being jettisoned in a low-altitude separation. Well, with astronauts lying on their backs, visibility was still a problem. The basic concept for lunar orbit rendezvous was as follows. Fly a two-part spaceship on a Saturn C5 to Earth orbit. Check it out. Then punch out to the moon. Go into lunar orbit. Separate the lunar excursion module and land it on the moon whilst the main craft remains in lunar orbit. After doing your things on the moon, the ascent stage lifts off to lunar orbit. You then rendezvous and dock with the main craft. Then abandon the lunar excursion module in lunar orbit. And then punch out of lunar orbit in the main craft and fly directly back to Earth. Well, there were five major advantages of lunar orbit rendezvous. One. It can be achieved with just one C5 launch. Secondly, half the payload mass than Earth orbit rendezvous. Thirdly, multiple chances to check out the spacecraft and to chicken out. Fourthly, the cost of 10 to 15% less than Earth orbit rendezvous mode. Fifthly, no need to carry Earth entry heat shield down to and back up from the moon. But there was one major disadvantage. Rendezvous in Earth orbit, let alone lunar orbit, had not yet been demonstrated. That was to be a goal of the Gemini project. With von Braun's objections withdrawn and Faget outmaneuvered, a press conference was organized for 1962, July the 11th, to announce the decision to tentatively use the lunar orbit rendezvous mission mode for Apollo. A 32-page report on this press conference was later published by NASA. This public announcement did not silence the critics. At the end of 1962 July, the President's Science Advisory Panel struck back. Wiesner issued a report criticizing lunar orbit rendezvous as, and I quote, extremely ingenious but highly specialized, an isolated development, end of quote. As related in the official NASA history, managing NASA in the Apollo era, the report argued, quote, if a two-man crew is adequate for the most difficult part of the lunar orbit rendezvous mission, then it cannot be persuasively argued that three men must be landed in other modes. Well, the panel preferred Earth orbit rendezvous because it seemed to offer a greater margin of safety. The NASA history notes that, and again I quote, the decision was made on grounds that were as much political as technical, end of quote. And by this, NASA historian Arnold Levine means that the lunar orbit rendezvous idea came out of Langley and as such was seen to be neutral between the Houston and the Huntsville camps. As a result of the mission mode decision, the design of the Apollo project evolved. So did the concepts for the lunar lander. The lander could now be much smaller than required for the Earth orbit rendezvous method. And, well, von Braun never got his Saturn C3 or C4, but had to be consoled with a Saturn C5. And nor did he get his cherished Nova. And nor did his hopes to fly reusable Saturn boosters eventuate. It was up to South African Elon Musk to bring the concept of reusable rockets to fruition 10 years ago. Now, Grumman, after some difficulties and design changes, did succeed at building the two-man lunar module. Hubolt was eventually recognized as the father of lunar orbit rendezvous and the one who changed the course of the Apollo project, which is why I said that 60 years ago was a very important date. So note that he initially called the lander the LEV, the Lunar Excursion Vehicle. Writing in 1971, Bjørn Lai said, "Most experts I consulted now believe that the United States might still today be far from reaching the Apollo goal if any of the lunar orbit rendezvous alternatives had been chosen." End of quote. Well, when Life magazine was preparing an article on the lunar orbit rendezvous mode, they wanted to use a picture of Hubolt on the cover. NASA was horrified and dissuaded them. At the urging of Neil Armstrong, Yuri Kondratyuk was eventually recognized in his own country with the result of coins, stamps, and statues honoring him. Well, today, the lessons of the 1960s are heeded in lunar mission planning. In the same way that John Hubolt analyzed mission modes, today's planners are using his techniques. Both the Chang'e 5 and Chang'e 6 are using lunar orbit rendezvous to return lunar samples to China. As for winged spacecraft, well, we did get the space shuttle, and it helped to build a sort of space station. Not as grandiose as that envisioned by von Braun, however. The full story of the Apollo mission mode decision is a bit like a maze. Unlike garden mazes, where there is only one solution, this maze has many equally valid pathways, of which I have told but one. I would encourage you to enter this maze and find your own preferred path, or to explore the numerous, though fascinating, dead ends. Well, today, plans are in progress to return humans to the moon. This project is called Artemis. Now, strangely, some of the concepts rejected 60 years ago are once again in vogue. For example, multiple launches for each mission. Flying the main Orion spacecraft separately from the Starship lunar lander and rendezvous in orbit around the moon. Also in flight, refueling the lander in Earth orbit. And tail-first landing on the moon of a spaceship that looks like something straight out of the 1950s science fiction comic book.
Stars, let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
In 1964, 2 years after the Apollo mission mode decision, Frank Sinatra and Count Basie did their version of Bart Howard's song, using an arrangement by Quincy Jones. This version became closely associated with the Apollo lunar missions. It was taken to the moon on portable cassette players by the crews of both Apollo 10 and 11. Now, let me insert a bit of history here. Before mobile telephones and their ability to carry thousands of songs immediately accessible with a flick and tap of the finger, there were iPods. Hundreds of songs could be accessed with button presses. Long before that came the Philips music cassette, released in 1963, right in the middle of the time period we have told about in this evening's The Space Show. And people could make their own mixtape of favourite songs from either vinyl records or from the radio. So before leaving for the moon on Apollo 10, Gene Cernan visited the home of Al Bishop, an employee of the Boeing company, and together they compiled a mixtape that Cernan took to the moon. On it was Frank Sinatra and Count Basie's Fly Me to the Moon. The Apollo 11 astronauts also carried their own mixtape, and guess what? The same song was on it.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you. Song, let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship.
The song has been to the moon at least twice.
In other words,
I'm Andrew Rennie. This has been The Space Show.